May it please the court. This matter presents a case of first impression, I believe, on the issue of instructing a jury on claims of fraudulent misrepresentation under MAI 23.05. Very generally, Missouri recognizes two kinds of fraudulent misrepresentation. One is the fraudulent misrepresentation of an existing fact or an existing condition of a piece of property. Another type of fraudulent misrepresentation is the misrepresentation of a present intent not to perform a promise to perform in the future. In other words, the second sort of fraudulent misrepresentation requires a misrepresentation of an existing fact, if you will, in the sense that the promisor promises to do something in the future while having a current intention not to perform. And of course, that current intention is necessary to cause that situation to constitute a factual misrepresentation. Otherwise, we simply have a breach of contract, a broken promise. MAI 23.05 on fraudulent misrepresentation includes two different paragraphs alternates for paragraph 4, in which the scienter for the misrepresentation in question is articulated. First, for misrepresentation of an existing fact, the scienter or state of mind requirement is that the defendant made the representation without knowing whether it was true or false. For a misrepresentation of a current intent to perform in the future, of course, the scienter requirement is that the defendant knew the representation was false at the time he made it. He falsely promised to perform in the future. In this case, as background, the plaintiff was in the market to buy a lot in a residential development on which he intended to build a home. The development was of a rolling, hilly area, and the plaintiff noticed when he was first looking at lots that his lot appeared to be at the bottom of a hill that ran down from east to west and from north to south, converging essentially in his backyard. And during discovery, it was shown that his lot was actually in the location of a natural drainage way for this property. Because he was concerned, about the possibility of the lot taking on water when it rained, he asked the defendant whether he was going to have any problems with drainage on this lot. The defendant, in response, made two responses. First, the defendant said, "There are no problems with water issues on lot 335. There are no problems with water issues." It is our contention that that is a misrepresentation of an existing condition. In other words, the condition, location, grading, and development of the lot was such that it was not susceptible to...
Counsel, that's not what the instruction submitted, though, is it? The instruction submitted that the lot would not flood. It didn't submit the language you just used, that there are no water problems. And didn't the Court of Appeals, they focused on wood and whether that's a promises to the future or whether it's a statement of that it had not flooded or it was designed not to flood versus whether it was a statement that it would not flood in the future. And that seems to be the key basis of disagreement between the parties.
Yes, the disagreement between the parties is whether the statement that the lot would not flood in the future is a future performance misrepresentation or an existing condition misrepresentation.
How can it be an existing condition? I think the opposing party's argument is that it can't be an existing condition if it's predictive of what will happen in the future. You argue it can be. Can you address that specifically?
I can, yes. Yes, Your Honor. Specifically, we relied before the Court of Appeals on two significant leading cases in the state of Missouri on this issue of existing conditions misrepresentations and future performance misrepresentations. These two cases were cited by the Court of Appeals in its opinion, agreeing with plaintiff that this case should have been submitted with the two different scienter requirements under MAI 2305. The Brenneman case, decided by the Western District in 1973, was an example of misrepresentation of a current intention not to perform in the future. In that case, the defendant represented that he would build a house to FHA plans and specifications. In other words, the home would be built. The court found this to be a fraudulent misrepresentation of future performance because the representation was that the home would be constructed according to certain specifications when in fact the defendant then had a current intention to substitute inferior construction practices and materials. Now, the case of Judy v. Arkansas Log Homes, which is also decided by the Western District in 1996, this involved a situation very similar to the misrepresentation that the lot would not flood. This was a case where a log home kit manufacturer represented that the log home would be watertight and that there would be no leakage through the joints between the logs. Well, in fact, what happened was the joints actually did allow water to penetrate the seal. It was absorbed and the logs decayed from the inside out. Now, the defendant, log home manufacturer, in that case made essentially the same argument being made by defendants in this case. They say, well, this relates the misrepresentation as to the quality, condition, performance capabilities of the log home kit. That all relates to future performance because the representation is that the house would be watertight, would not leak, would not decay, et cetera, et cetera. The court rejected that argument. The court said, no, this is a representation of an existing condition of this log home kit, that it was designed and manufactured in such a manner that it will perform as represented. The Judy Court and the Brenneman Court, as I recall, both said in the instances of a misrepresentation of an existing condition or a misrepresentation of future performance, you have to wait until the future to determine whether the representation was false. That doesn't mean that a misrepresentation of an existing condition.
And what existing factor are you saying was misrepresented here?
That the lot was developed and graded in such a manner that it would not flood, that water would not flood across it, that the fact that it was located in a natural drainage way would not cause any water problems on the lot. And let me give you a little background for that position, because there were two misrepresentations made. The existing condition misrepresentation was that there are no problems with water issues on lot 335. There are no problems with water issues on lot 335. And the second misrepresentation with respect to the current intention of the defendant to engage in future performance, the second misrepresentation was, if there are, I will regrade we will regrade, we will build retaining walls, whatever it takes to resolve the problem.
And did you argue to the trial court that the statement that there are no water issues on lot 335 was a misrepresentation of an existing fact?
Yes, Your Honor.
As opposed to the language would not flood. Did you argue that the evidence that there are no water issues on lot 335 was the misrepresentation of the existing condition rather than the statement would not flood?
The evidence was that the defendant had said there are no problems with water issues, and
right, but the question is, did you ask that the instruction read to include that misrepresentation?
That the lot would not flood.
No, but
no, that they're the one that you just said.
There are no water issues.
You're assuming the two are identical. That will not. That he represented that the lot would not flood, and he represented that there are no problems with water issues on lot 335. And the court is asking whether you made that argument or how, why you think those are comparable. Would not flood is different language than there are no water problems on the lot.
The reason is the context. There are no problems with the water issues. If there are, we will regrade, we will build retaining walls.
Why didn't the instruction say there are no problems on the lot?
I don't recall, Your Honor. I don't recall.
Did the court give the verdict directing instruction that you requested?
No, sir. No, it didn't.
What did the instruction that you request say?
The instruction that we requested combined the two representations and used the scienter requirement that defendant made the representation without knowing whether it was true or false. The court instead combined the representations and used the higher scienter level that defendant knew it was false at the time it was made. At the instruction conference, we argued that the court should use the lower scienter level that we had proposed, or in the alternative, should follow committee comment N to 23.05, which says submit two separate packages when you have two different kinds of misrepresentation, so that each one may be afforded its proper scienter element.
What was the actual language you used that was the misrepresentation in your proposed verdict director?
Did you use the would not flood language in your proposed one also?
I believe I did. And probably the reason for that was that the lot literally does flood. I mean, it floods. Today, I'm sure there are white caps in that backyard because there's such a quantity of water that moves with such great velocity across that lot. So, you know, the defendant said that there was no water problem. Almost immediately, the plaintiff began seeing this flood of water come across his lot. And at that point, the defendant said, I don't have any responsibility. You'll have to look elsewhere for any remedy. And of course, the Court of Appeals did order that the case be reversed and remanded for a new trial, and that the case be instructed in accordance with the manner in which we suggested, pursuant to committee comments in, with two packages, separate misrepresentation submissions, different scienter levels.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
You'll have time on rebuttal.
May I please report? Sure. Good morning. This is a fraudulent misrepresentation case, and let me raise this a little bit. This is a fraudulent misrepresentation case, and in a fraud case, the words are everything. And so it's significant that Mr. Stevens' entire argument on appeal is based upon words that the jury never heard. Words such as that the lot was designed and graded to prevent flooding. Words such as that the lot was floodproof. There was no testimony to that effect before the jury. The statement that there were no water problems on the lot. Again, now that there was testimony to that effect, but that was not the jury instruction that counsel for plaintiff proposed.
The Court of Appeals opinion, though, found that the language would not flood in this context meant was designed in such a way that flooding would not occur, and that was a false statement of existing fact.
And the way I read the opinion was that it was based upon the supposition that there was evidence presented that the lot was designed and graded to prevent flooding, but there wasn't any such evidence or testimony.
What about the testimony that on repeated occasions the opposing counsel's client asked about flooding and was told that was not a problem and that it would not flood?
Well, I think those are different issues. Now, obviously, Mr. Jones denies ever saying that, but taking it as true, a statement that there are no water problems on the lot, that statement wasn't submitted to the jury. I think there's a reason that statement wasn't submitted to the jury. I think it's because there was no evidence to support it. There was no evidence to support that it was false. There was no evidence that at the time Mr. Jones made the statement that there were actually water problems on the lot. But I think perhaps the bigger issue is when you break down the statements that were presented to the jury, to the extent there are two statements, that Defendant Kirk Jones represented to plaintiff Sean Stevens that Lot 335 would not flood, and if it did, defendants would remedy any flooding problem. It's our position that the court does not need to look at that first part of the statement, that the lot would not flood, because that is merely a prediction. And Missouri law is clear. It's been the law for 60 years, over 60 years, since before the Lowther case cited in our brief, that mere statements of opinions, expectations, and predictions for the future are insufficient to authorize a recovery for fraudulent misrepresentations. So the statement that the lot would not flood in the future, it couldn't be anything more than a prediction, an opinion.
I think opposing counsel agrees if it's a prediction, then the proper standard was submitted, but says it wasn't. It was a statement of the current condition of the lot, that in the condition it's in, it would not flood. This is just a fact. There's no flooding. And that seems to be the key, really the only basis of disagreement other than what people said.
Right.
And if that statement is in the context of other statements is that there are no water problems, the lot would not flood, does the context of the statement make clear that it is a present condition?
Well, I think that's where you need to look to the other cases, such as the Judy case versus Arkansas Log Homes, and see, you know, what the testimony, what the evidence was there. And also in if I could remember the name, the Nyquist case that's out of Washington that's cited by Mr. Stevens. In those cases, the similar arguments were made that these were statements as to future issues, and the court rejected those, but they were rejected based upon statements as to the present condition of the property, such as in the Judy case, that the logs were penetrated to prevent rot, that they were designed to be durable, etc. Something that the person making the statement did to prevent these future problems was at issue. Same thing in the Nyquist case. The representation there was that the material would not warp. But again, there was testimony there that the defendant had spent thousands of dollars in research and had developed a process for treating the masonite to prevent it from warping. It was something that the speaker did to prevent warping that made it a statement as to the present condition. In this case, the only statement submitted to the jury was that the lot would not flood. There's not some sort of statement as to the design of the property. In fact, the property had been, you know, had been clear cut, but final grading hadn't been done. There's very little that Mr. Jones had done to the property at the time the statement was made. He didn't make any kind of representation that the way he had graded the property was intended to prevent flood or that it was floodproof. Nothing like that was stated. And I think the...
Was there evidence in the record that he said there are no water problems on the lot?
I think the testimony, and I can, I've got it handy. Mr. Jones, or Mr. Stevens, rather, testified that Mr. Jones told him that there are no water issues on this lot, and if there are, we will regrade, build retaining walls, do whatever we have to do to solve it.
Do you agree that that is a statement of an existing condition?
I think that is a statement as to the existing condition, but there's also no evidence of its falsity. First of all, that wasn't the statement that was presented to the jury, but even if it had been, and I think it was a strategic reason why that statement wasn't presented to the jury, because there wasn't any evidence presented that when he made that statement, there were existing water problems. And I think
but it would be up to the jury to determine whether he made that statement without knowledge. Is that correct?
That's correct. Well, if there was sufficient evidence to support the submission of that instruction in the first place, yes.
Right, that he made the representation without knowing whether it was true or false.
Yeah, there would have to be some evidence that he made that representation without knowing if it was true or
false. That it was false, and that he didn't know whether it was false or not. I mean, it has to be evidence that it was false.
You have to have evidence of both if you're going to submit it both. That's correct. But I think, you know, it is significant how Mr. Stevens presented the issue to the jury, because the statement that the lot would not flood, but if it does, I will fix it, the first part of that statement immediately belies that this was a statement of absolute fact as to the condition of the property.
Was there no evidence that he knew it was in a natural flood area, that it was a natural drainage area for the other hills and so forth? Nothing.
No. In fact, the testimony was that it was, you know, it was pretty clear where the water was going to go. Mr. Jones stated that.
Well, that's what I'm asking. You're saying there was no evidence that he knew it would, there would be a water problem, but you're also saying that it was self-evident there would be water problems.
Well, there was no evidence that there was an existing water problem, you know, whatever that means, that there wasn't any evidence of an existing flooding that had occurred, nothing like that. His statement was only as to, you know, where the water would drain on the property. I mean, water drains on everybody's property, and it doesn't mean that there's a flood or a problem. He just testified that it was clear where the water was going to go.
Did Mr. Stevens testify that he raised with him his builder's concern that that the existing condition of the lot raised a question whether there were water problems? What was the evidence regarding that?
Mr. Stevens testified that his contractor did have concerns about.
But did water. He communicate that to Mr. Jones?
I'm not certain. I don't recall testimony indicating that Mr. Rockwell communicated that to Mr. Jones, or that even that Mr. Stevens said, "Well, my contractor says there's going to be problems." I think it was just the testimony was that Mr. Stevens communicated that he was concerned about problems with water and the alleged statement that the lot would not flood. Getting back to this idea of a prediction versus a future promise, I think that an analogy kind of makes sense here. The classic example of a mere prediction versus a future promise is, let's say I'm trying to sell you my business and I say, if you buy my business, you're going to make a ton of money. Well, that's the dance and development case, and there's a long line of cases in Missouri that say that sort of statement, even though I may be in a better position than you to know whether my business is profitable, that statement is still just a prediction of an opinion. Now, if I make that same statement, but I say, you know, if you buy my business, you're going to make a ton of money, but if you don't, I'll buy it back in a year. If after a year passes, you don't make a ton of money, I'll buy it back. That's where actionable fraud occurs, and that's why the statement that was presented to the jury was actionable, because Mr. Jones...
If you have a present intent not to perform.
If the intention existed at the time not to buy back the property, or at the time not to fix the property, and that's the actionable fraud here. So I don't think that the court needs to look to the first part of the statement at all. To the extent it does, I think there is a difference between saying that the lot would not flood and the statement that was offered by a plaintiff that the lot was flood-proof. Those are different types of statements because they're flood-proof indicates that there's something related to the design or the condition of the property that prevents flood, whereas the lot would not flood could relate to weather patterns or just general information about my belief that the lot would not flood in the future. You know, you can go back to the same business example. If I tell you you're going to make a lot of money, you might take that as meaning that the business is profitable, but those are different things. If I say my business is profitable, arguably I'm talking about the profit that it's making at the time and not making some sort of statement about the future. So I think that...
Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to reiterate the point that the words submitted to the jury actually mattered. And here, whether you consider that the first part of that statement is simply a statement of a prediction that's not actionable fraud anyway and it needs to not be considered, or it's a statement about the future, in which case the proper scienter level was submitted to the jury.
Could you talk to us about the standard of review? Is this a question of a matter of law that we have de novo review, or is there any part of the trial court's decision that we give deference to the trial court having any discretion, because obviously it appears to be a pretty close case. So
it is a close case.
So what's our standard of review that we apply?
Well, we've taken the position that it's abuse of discretion, and it's one of those sort of ominous mixed questions of law. In fact, the case law is pretty clear, and the rules are pretty clear that where there's an MAI that's applicable to the facts, the instruction should be given. This isn't a case where an MAI instruction wasn't given, where an alternate to MAI was given. This isn't the sort of case where there's a question as to whether the statement in the jury instruction correctly stated the law. The jury was correctly instructed here as to the scienter level the judge determined applied. Now, our position is that evidence determines which scienter level, which of the options under 23.05 should be applied. So that's a discretionary issue. Was there sufficient evidence to support that this was a statement about a future promise versus a present condition? And the judge listened to all of the evidence. He listened to the statements about water problems and knew what submissions the evidence supported. And he was in the best possible position to determine whether this was a statement as to future promise or present condition of the property. And so, in short, we believe that it is an abuse of discretion standard as to which of the scienter requirements applies. And if I could just speak very briefly about prejudice, Mr. Stevens admits that prejudice is an element that he has to prove in order to obtain a reversal based upon instructional error. The only statement of prejudice in Mr. Stevens' brief is that there was a defense verdict, so he was prejudiced. Our position is that more was required. He had to at least point to some evidence that Mr. Jones made a statement about the property without knowing whether it was true or false. He needed to show that Mr. Jones was reckless in making the statement or something to that effect. Mr. Stevens didn't point to any evidence to that effect. There wasn't any evidence that the jury was confused or misdirected, the type of things that typically prove prejudice.
Well, it clearly is a higher standard to prove that someone knew it was false than that they didn't determine whether it was true or false. I mean, so isn't there obvious prejudice by placing a higher burden on a party, a higher burden of proof on a party?
Well, yes. I mean, I guess arguably there's an issue with, I guess my point is that there has to be evidence to submit both submissions, to support both submissions. There has to be evidence both that Mr. Jones made the statement without knowing and that Mr. Jones made the statement without knowing whether it was true or false. So he made the statement knowing it was false versus made the statement without knowing one way or the other. And while there may have been evidence to sufficient to submit the instruction that he knew it was false, there also had to be evidence that he made the statement without knowing one way or the other whether it was true or false. And it was plaintiff's burden as appellant to point to that evidence to show prejudice, and that didn't happen here.
Are there any questions? Thank you for your time this side.
Just to clarify a fact question that was raised, in fact, the plaintiff did state his concerns to the defendant about the drainage that had been expressed to the plaintiff by his builder.
The Judge Wilson asked the question or made the comment that not only did you have to prove that Mr. Jones did not know whether it was true or false, but that the statement actually had to be false, that there had to be water issues on the lot at the time the statement was made. Mm-hmm. What evidence do you have of that?
The evidence I have of that is the statement of the owner of the land for the prior 50 years that this particular lot was located in the natural drainage way of that configuration of hills. We also have evidence that the defendant, developer slash builder, had developed, I believe, 400 houses in various subdivisions in the past and had graded those subdivisions. And the defendant made the representation that with his expertise in grading, he knew where the water would go and he could make the water go where he thought it should. The lot was purchased, I believe, in June or July of one year. And while the house, I believe it was 1999, and while the house was under construction in October, there was already flooding on the lot in terms of great quantities of water rushing very quickly, digging a gulch.
So the previous owner of 50 years said it flooded, but the seller, in this case, said, did he make attempts at correcting that from the time he bought it from the previous owner?
No. If I understand your question correctly, the prior owner for 50 years of the land was called Damar Development, Inc., and then the defendant that made the representations that did the grading, the actual development work, was Marker.
Marker, did he make any changes in the land so he could make that representation then? Did he make an attempt to make it so it wouldn't flood?
No. To our belief, no. Mr. Stevens said that he was out looking at the development when it was under construction, and he could see the two hills converging essentially in his lot, and therefore he was given solace by Mark Kirk's representation that he would regrade if necessary, build retaining walls if necessary.
And he didn't do any of that.
And he did not do any of that, yes, sir.
If the only statement that had been presented to the jury was that the defendant would remedy any flooding problem experienced, if that was the only statement, what's the scienter requirement that had to be instructed?
If he said he would remedy and he had a current intention not to perform, then the scienter requirement would be that he knew at the time he made the representation that
it would be an error of law to instruct the jury if that were the statement, that the scienter was only that he didn't know whether it was true or false, correct? If that was the only statement, then it would be an error to instruct the jury that they could find liability if he didn't know whether it was true or false.
I agree.
Okay. And in your proposed instruction, what was the scienter requirement that you offered?
We offered the didn't know if it was true or false.
For that second alternative, and for the first one, what did you offer? For the would not flood, what did you offer?
Your Honor, we offered the lower scienter requirement for the two representations together. then the defendants came back and said, no, you need to have the higher scienter requirement for both representations. At that point, realizing the situation, I said, Your Honor, we need to split these verdict directors into two packages so that we can have the proper scienter element submitted for each type of misrepresentation. And that's all set forth in the instruction conference on the record, that we asked for the two packages as set forth in committee comment in.
Any other questions? Case will be submitted.